you're in the 06010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus. The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. And whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. And welcome to Fantasy Football 2021. The Super Bowl is behind us. Congratulations to the Buccaneers. And an announcement, which you're finding out if you're listening to this podcast right now. Your friends, Matthew Berry, Stefania Bell, and me, if you consider me a friend, will be with you every single week during the 2021 offseason to talk all things fantasy football. It's a new day here on the Fantasy Focus. We're going to try to keep our content rolling over the next handful of months before football is played again. Got lots to get into today, but let's start here. How are you doing, Stefania Bell? Because I'm not really concerned about Matthew.
I'm good. I've all things considered, this is my first full winter in Connecticut. I have not been able to go to my tropical locations that I prefer to travel to in January and February. There's zero boondoggling on my end. I'm stuck in the snow, but I'm happy to be here with my friends. I miss you guys.
That's right. I miss you as well. By the way, we're doing this over Zoom. I think there'll be some video available over the YouTube page on ESPN. We're doing it in Zoom because obviously it's COVID and it's hard to get into a studio right now. Matthew, how are you, my friend? And what's going on in your world?
You know what? I'm good. Obviously, we've had some snow days. So, you know, homeschooling with the kids is always an adventure.
What have they taught you in school?
Yeah. you know what? I'm learning my multiplication tables. You know, so that's exciting. Learning about geography. You know, that's also exciting. So, and you know, I'm trying to get my TikTok game going. It's been lagging. So
I really don't want to know what that entails.
Yeah, it hasn't started yet, but that's one of my goals is to tick to the talk. I'm pretty sure that's how the kids refer to it.
It's definitely not.
Yeah, is it not interesting? No, there you go. Listen, I was going to do a podcast, but Fields has taken them all. I was just like, do you need me to do a hosting this thing? Do you need me to do that? And they're like, no, Fields got that. No, Fields got that as well. Well, what about, do you want me to, would you like me to host the Spanish language, women's lacrosse college division III podcast? Like, no, Fields hanging on with that. Fields got that one as well. So I'm just sitting at home.
Yeah, you are. You know what? Field was at the Senior Bowl. I mean, let's just talk about that. Talk about next level insight. Where you're not going to get a fantasy football host who is also leading the commentary at the Senior Bowl week, all the practices, checking out all the draft prospects. So for everybody who is going to be fantasy football eligible next year, no one knows them better than our Field Yates.
Well, I feel like it was a great experience that I wish all of us could be at because I know it's an event specific to the draft, and I understand that it's only seniors there plus a couple of juniors that have graduated from college. But it has a big event feel, and I think there could be some fantasy conversations that maybe in a future year all of us can be down there and have live from Mobile, Alabama. Coming up on the show today, and again, some weeks we'll have a lot of news. Some weeks there may not be that much news. This week we do have some news to react to, as Daniel Dopp's beloved Detroit Lions have traded away Matthew Stafford to the Los Angeles Rams for Jared Goff, plus a pair of first-round picks and a third-round pick. And then we're going to revisit the Super Bowl, not recap, but you guys all watch the game, but just sort of talk through maybe some fantasy takeaways from that game and then fantasy lessons learned in general in 2020. But let's go back to this trade. And Matthew, this was certainly one of those trades that it created quite a ripple in the NFL world on Saturday night, two Saturdays ago, when Adam Schefter broke the story. Stafford going to Los Angeles, Jared Goff and picks going to Detroit. Let's focus on Stafford here because he was the primary piece involved in this trade. When I say that Matthew Stafford goes from Detroit with that wide receiver group and that defense to Los Angeles with that wide receiver group and that defense, his value in fantasy went, and you fill in the blank.
Up. Went up. Look, I mean, I think Daniel can speak to this. You leave Detroit, good things happen, right? That's just a positive, right? That's just in general, like.
That's so mean.
Not true.
It's so true. It's so true, Daniel. look at what's happened to your pathetic life. Since
I left Michigan, God. I've been tied to you for like six freaking years. So like,
I know. You're welcome. You're welcome. Matthew Stafford should be so lucky as to be tied to me. But here's what I think. In all seriousness, I think this improves Matthew Stafford's fantasy stock. Remember, this is a guy who's the 12th best quarterback in fantasy on a points per game basis. If you look at all the games that he played where he's fully healthy, remember he left a couple games. He left one game early injured, and there was another game where he's basically limping along, but it was clear he was not 100%. But if you look at just basically the games that he was fully healthy, 18 fantasy points per game, 12th in fantasy points per game there, QB 12. Now he goes to Los Angeles. He goes to Sean McVay's offense. I think this is not a stretch to say that it will be a better offense. It'll be a more consistent and a more more efficient offense that's in scoring position more. Since the start, since Sean McVay became the head coach of the Rams in 2017, the Rams are top five in the NFL in passing yards. They're top eight in the NFL in pass attempts. And why is that important? Because since the start of 2019, Matthew Stafford is ninth in fantasy points per pass attempt. That's a stat just to tell you what you know when you watch football. You let Matthew Stafford throw, good things generally happen. I prefer, even though, listen, he had a nice supporting cast in Detroit, obviously, with Galladay and Jones and Hockenson, although he didn't have them all in the same field at the same time. But I think having Robert Woods, having a little Cooper Kupp, having a strong run game out of Cam Akers, we'll see what you get out of, you know, the second year of Van Jefferson. There's already been talk that other wide receivers want to join him in Los Angeles. Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay are both obviously wide receivers. And if you watch Kelly Stafford's Instagram, she seems to indicate, I know the Staffords and the Joneses, Marvin and his wife, are close just on a personal level. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Marvin Jones join him in LA as well. And so, you know, this is a team that was, I believe, top five in red zone trips over the last 2 years. So I think ultimately Matthew Stafford becomes a top 10 fantasy quarterback. I think he ranks somewhere in that 8 to 10 range. The only downside to Stafford is that he doesn't run field. And so many of our top 10 quarterbacks in 2021 are going to be mobile quarterbacks because that position, you need a quarterback that's mobile. But look, Matthew Stafford is 4,000 yards and, you know, 20 plus touchdowns in the bank. And now he's going to a better offense with a better offensive coach, a good offensive line, and better, equal, if not better, weapons.
So I'm going to get to my thoughts in a second. Stefania, one of the stigmas that Matthew Stafford has battled during his career is being brittle or being inconsistent in terms of availability. I feel like maybe Matthew Stafford, actually, like, the inverse is true, is that, like, he may always be injured, but the dude rarely misses time. That's part of the allure of acquiring someone like Matthew Stafford, is knowing he's going to be available.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's this perception issue that he's been battling since the beginning of his career, and maybe it's because he was hurt early. I asked Kyle to pull the years because now it's, 12 seasons he's been in the league. And if you go back to his rookie season, 2009, he missed 6 games because of a shoulder injury. And then the following year, he missed 13 games, and he had an issue with his kneecap as well. And there was a question about whether that was going to be problematic for him in terms of affecting his mobility, such as it is. And he just kind of got through that. And then you go to 2011 to 2018, and he played in every single game for 8 seasons. Like, that just doesn't happen very often. And so he had this stretch where he was never missing a game. And to your point, Field, even though he was banged up occasionally throughout those 8 seasons, he never missed time. Now, you can look at last year not the one that just passed, but in 2019, where he missed 8 games. And that was when they shut him down because of the back injury. But he had a torn ligament in his finger, and he played through that in his throwing hand. And even this year, the thumb injury that he had, some quarterbacks might not have been able to play. He pressed through that. And this year, the only time he was on the injury report with these 3 issues was at the very end, but he ended up playing all 16 games. So again, yes, but think of what the Lions were for so much of the time that he was hurt. He was not protected. He was hit all the time. I think a key for him in Los Angeles is going to be for them to protect him. He's going to, that's going to be important for longevity of his career. And the other thing is his shoulder has not been a problem. This is not like a degenerative rotator cuff issue or something where you're worried about his ability to throw. And his advantage, even though he's not, the runner quarterback, like Matthew pointed out, he's got the big gun of an arm and there's no sign that that's going to fade at all.
Yeah. So my thoughts, first of all, obviously great insight in the idea that he's built to last, even though early reporting suggests the Rams aren't planning to extend Matthew Stafford yet. They've got at least 2 years of him. And I understand why they view him as a real life upgrade over Jared Goff. Matthew, you pointed to a couple of indicators, 4,000 yards and 20 touchdowns in the bank, basically every single year, which is what Jared Goff was for his four seasons being coached by Sean McVay. So I think in a vacuum, Matthew Stafford's a better player. But Matthew Stafford leaves a place in Detroit where he needed to throw a ton because the defense was so bad. He was surrounded by Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones, and DJ Hawkinson was the third best tight end in fantasy this year. It's not like he's a total scrub by any stretch. Danny Amendola was a useful piece. My point is that, like, I don't know that I see a huge boost to Matthew Stafford's value as a fantasy player. Like, I feel like he is kind of what he was last year, which is you can maybe live with him as a starting quarterback. You're never going to, you know, I'm probably not going to prioritize him as my starter going into a draft. The lack of rushing maybe limits the upside. It's a move that makes the Rams better. I don't know that I see a decided uptick in his fantasy value. Thoughts on that, Matthew?
Well, it's interesting. So, I mean, I think we're sort of saying the same thing. I'm slightly more bullish than you. But, I mean, listen, I said, here's a guy that was QB12 last year on a points per game basis. Right. And I'm gonna rank him between 8 and 10. Yeah. So is it an uptick yet? Is it a massive uptick? It isn't. Because, yes, I think there is a limited rushing. And to your point, the Rams have a much better defense. Is he going to be in as many shootouts in L.A. as he was in Detroit? No, he's not. But I also think they're going to be in scoring position a lot more. Sean McVay does like to, like to throw the ball. Again, I referenced this, but just to underline it, since the start of 2019, the Rams have the fifth most red zone drives per game. I mean, they get into scoring position quite a bit. And so I think the efficiency of the offense masks maybe the shootoutness, if you will, of Detroit. I also think, by the way, that you don't make the kind of trade. You know, obviously McVay was heavily involved in trying to get Matthew Stafford there to LA. So I don't think you make this trade to have Matthew Stafford hand off and then suddenly become a run heavy offense. Like,
no doubt. No,
they gave up a lot to get him in terms of real life. I do think, you know, it's weird. Like, I know what you're saying in terms of just, if you look at the numbers, Stafford and Goff are probably closer than you might think. But I just think for me, the consistency, right? When you watch Rams football, forget fantasy for a second. When you watch Rams football, there are times when you're like, you watch Jared Goff and you're like, I get it, man. Yeah, I understand why that guy was the number one overall pick. And then there are games you're watching like, who is this guy? Where did this guy come from? Like, how do you miss that throw? And I just think there's a level, and I say professionalism, which is not fair because I don't know that Jared Goff is not a professional, but there's a level of consistency with Matthew Stafford and that we have not seen yet from Jared Goff in his career so far.
Yeah, so I think what this level set here is that I agree. Jared Goff was a little bit too much of a yo-yo player over the past two seasons in LA. I think with Stafford, though, is that what we've realized with the rushing quarterbacks is that very few stand tall in the pocket and just deliver strike quarterbacks are going to be top five, top seven considerations in fantasy, weekly lock it in starters. Like, off the top of my head, Tom Brady is one, but like, there aren't a bunch of, like, there may not be anybody else who's an immobile quarterback that's a lock starter next year. Like, even Aaron Rodgers has enough rushing mobility, and obviously Patrick Mahomes. And I'm not talking about the guys like Lamar Jackson and obviously Josh Allen and Russell Wilson, who are elite rushers. So anyways, I think that
Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson.
Of course. Yeah. All those guys. So,
and we'll get into this in a future episode, but I mean, I think we'll wait to see for the shoe to drop on Carson Wentz. But as you know, Adam Schefter reporting, obviously, that the Eagles are shopping Carson Wentz, and if and when that trade does happen, like, I'm going to be all in on Jalen Hurts this upcoming year.
Yeah, so those are examples of players that I think have a chance to be ahead of Matthew Stafford in the quarterback rankings. Let's move forward. And I don't want to not talk about the Rams wide receivers because there's nothing there. But, like, Matthew, does the replacing Jared Goff with Matthew Stafford, does it really change the narrative on Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods? I kind of feel like those are guys who are locked into this range, right? Like, I don't know that they're going to consistently be top five ranked wide receivers, but I think most weeks I'll probably slide either of those players between 11 and like 25 in my wide receiver rankings.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, I did sort of an immediate reaction video after the trade happened, like on Saturday night. And yeah, I think off the top of my head, Robert Woods was wide receiver 19 this year, Cooper Kupp, my little Cooper Kupp, wide receiver 30, all on points per game basis. And I'm like, you know what? I think they're going to be drafted this year, basically where they were last year, which is somewhere between wide receiver, you know, 14 and 18. They're going to be both, you know, basically, you know, mid to low tier wide receiver twos. I prefer Woods to Kupp. Now, let's see, obviously, do they add a Marvin Jones? Do they add Kenny Golladay? Is there any, what happens, you know, in terms of any of Matthew Stafford's former teammates joining him in LA, which would certainly change how we feel about that receiving threat, that receiving core. But I agree with you. Listen, the volume has always been there with those guys. I think they'll continue to be there. The volume will continue to be there for those guys. And it's going to be a more, like I said, I think it'll be a more efficient offense that'll be in scoring position. Both guys, I think, had Jared Goff remained the quarterback of the Rams, they're probably top 25 wide receivers. Now, for me, they're probably top 20-ish. So, yeah, again, maybe a slight uptick for me, but we agree. I don't think a massive change for either of these guys.
Stefania, it feels like the Ram player who's most likely to see a quantum leap in fantasy value going into the season next year is Cam Akers, and that has nothing to do with who the quarterback is. It has everything to do with the fact that down the stretch, he had the look of a rising talent in Los Angeles. He became the guy in the backfield, which is something that had not regularly been the case in Los Angeles, and he made the most of his opportunity.
Yeah, I think he's definitely the star going into this season. One of the things is we're sitting here talking about the value of Matthew Stafford. I'm thinking, you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, we talk about play action. I wonder how they're going to use the running backs differently in the Rams offense with Matthew Stafford there. I wonder if that will happen. Matthew Stafford, when paired with Theo Riddick, consistently had a pass catching running back available to him, which makes him more valuable as a fantasy quarterback potentially as well. Yeah. And I think that the Cam Akers, Matthew Stafford connection there could be something that could boost both of their fantasy value if Cam Akers ends up being as much of a pass catching threat as I think he could be. I think he could develop into that.
Yeah, and Matthew, it's only a couple of years removed from Todd Gurley being the focal point of a Sean McVay offense. We're not going to get to that level going into the season, I don't think, for Cam Akers. But I'd imagine that all the articles in whatever, June, July, August, I don't know when these things come out, surrounding you know potential breakout stars in fantasy, especially second-year players, Cam Akers will be amongst the most buzzworthy names.
Yeah, he'll be up there. And now there's some other guys that I like more, candidly. So it'd be interesting to see sort of where my ranks come out post NFL draft and where, you know, Cam Akers is as well. But up until this year, to your point, Sean McVay has been a one back guy. Now, when that back is Todd Gurley in his prime, you understand it. They were a committee team this year. And, you know, and when they went with one back, it was mostly because they had to. Right. I mean, but, you know, that week 14 game, Cam Akers showed what he was capable of. Be interesting. Like, and we'll talk about this because we're going to get to Detroit in a second. I think as I sit here right now, Field, I think I'd prefer DeAndre Swift to Cam Akers. If we were talking about second year running backs, you know, kind of buzzworthy running backs. And then you think about like, just sort of think about it off the top of your head. Right. So, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Jonathan Taylor, right? I mean,
Taylor, yes. Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire next season going in. He's the Chiefs starting running back. Like,
I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah. Oh, look at you.
I don't know, Damian Williams coming back, right?
Like, that's true.
One of those guys played incredible last year, right? And I understand that. Listen, I get it, but it was a tough year for Clyde Edwards-Helaire in terms of the injuries and some of the things that took place late in the season. But I'm kind of convinced that Damian Williams is going to have a pretty useful role for the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll get to that in a different conversation. Yeah. Maybe
interesting.
Even
All right.
About, well, we'll talk about that in just a little bit.
Fair enough. However, but anyway, my point is yes, I agree. Listen. Whatever Cam Akers' stock was this year, it's on the rise because we'd expect him to open up camp. He is going to be the starter. He's going to get the majority of work for the Rams. And again, an offense that we think, thanks to Matthew Stafford, will be more consistent and more efficient and in scoring position more often.
All right. So just let's get to the Lions. And I want to talk about the fantasy football in a second. But Daniel, I know you got to cue up your microphone here for a second. You're a Lions fan. Matthew Stafford. Yeah. I don't know. I would think, you know, I think Barry Sanders is safely locked in as the greatest Lion of all time. Calvin Johnson probably behind him in terms of
Dan Orlovsky,
15 years or so, Dan Orlovsky. But Daniel, what were your thoughts just like emotionally? What was your reaction to this trade of Matthew Stafford?
It very honestly, it kind of took a while to get to a point where it felt like this was real. Excuse me, that this was real because the last, I don't know, probably I would say 3 or 4 years, it kind of cemented the idea that like we've had a quarterback for a decade. We've had a guy that we've been able to count on. Like Stefania said, I will never, ever, ever, ever question Matthew Stafford's toughness. What he did to be out on the field for the Detroit Lions, one of the worst franchises in the NFL, to give his body game after game after game for that city and for that team. He has made a fan of me. No, I have made a fan of him. No, I'm a fan of his for life. It does not make a difference where he goes. I absolutely love him and who he is as a player, what he has done on and off the field. So there was a little bit of a like, a, you know, I knew that this was what needed to happen for the Lions to take their next step forward as a franchise. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt to watch somebody that you care about so much leave your team to move on. And I hope nothing but for the best of him. After the Lions win a Super Bowl or two, I hope Matthew gets his too. I really, I mean, want that.
Don't you think that they were also kind of doing him a service?
Absolutely.
You don't know what the, how much time he's got left. And we, here we are talking about his durability, but that's not in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. And I think he's got probably 2 or 3 more. I'm not saying he can only play for 2 or 3 more years, but 2 or 3 more really good years. And the Rams have tried to be a team to win it all, like every single year, right? Mm-hmm. So they're looking at this like, Matthew Stafford, win now. And I think the Lions finally came to terms with, we're not going to be able to win now.
Yeah.
So we're right. going to do him a favor in the latter part of his career.
We'll keep things rolling here on the Lions side. Just, I want to keep it sort of light with Detroit because I think there are so many uncertainties.
Can I just point in one thing real quickly here? You know, which is that, you know, first off, you know, I always love to give Daniel grief about his Lions fandom. But I'll say 2 things here. Number one is the Washington professional football team. It was well reported. I know Albert Breer among them that up until Saturday during the day that Washington and the Panthers were considered the, you know, the front runners to get Matthew Stafford a trade.
Yep.
And I would have been thrilled as a Washington football fan to get Matthew Stafford. So, kudos to the Rams. And I also think, by the way, I got a lot of like, who won this trade? And I honestly think, look, I love to make fun of the Lions because I love to make fun of Daniel. I thought the Lions did great here. I thought the Lions got more than I would have expected for Matthew Stafford. And I think it's a good trade for them. They obviously, they're in rebuilding mode. They need to rebuild. And it's going to take a while. And so, you know, I mean, given, you know, Stafford's age, better to get something for him. Jared Goff is still young and still has his fans in the league. He is somebody that has been to the playoffs, I think, you know, whatever it is, 3 of the last 4 years. I don't know. Like, see what you have in Jared Goff, but the picks alone, like, I thought this was a good trade for the Lions.
Yeah, it made sense for both sides, and the Lions are sort of in a reboot mode right now, which will likely include Jared Goff being their bridge quarterback. I just quickly want to ask about 2 players in the Lions because as things presently stand, Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones, Danny Amendola are all not under contract for 2021, so can't get too far ahead of ourselves on the value of Marvin Jones in Detroit when he could be playing somewhere else. Matthew, you mentioned DeAndre Swift as a player that you think could rise next year. My only concern, my primary concern is probably this. The Lions might not be very good next year. And I just don't know, like, the idea of being able to run the football a ton sounds good on paper, and especially when you hire the staff that you did, which includes Anthony Lynn as your offensive coordinator, a tough, rugged head coach, and Dan Campbell, who we know wants to be physical. But if you're getting clobbered week after week, it may not be as easy to run the football as much as you want. I'm still going to have them high. I just don't know that I'll go as far as I think there'll probably be people that are more optimistic than I am. So on TJ Hockenson, though, he's probably the only other player that I think can be discussed with the Lions right now, Matthew. On the one hand, maybe his value goes down because he's got Jared Goff and not Matthew Stafford. On the other hand, he's like one of the five tight ends we actually trust. So his value can't sink that much in the position, can it?
I don't think it does. And I think, you know, whatever downgrade there is from Stafford to Goff in terms of quarterback play, I think just increased volume and target share. Remember, TJ Hockenson basically lost the majority of his rookie year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was injured for the majority of his rookie year. So last year was really his first full – this year, 2020, was his first full year in the NFL. And so, you know, and obviously he looked like the guy that was a high draft pick, that was a first-round draft pick. And you're like, oh, yeah, now I get it. He's still very young. And so I'll be very excited about TJ Hockenson. Again, it's sort of hard to handicap the Lions offense until we know – the status of Galladay and Marvin Jones and Danny Amendola, and honestly, what else they do in free agency. But as we stand now, look, he's going to be the focal point. My expectation is that as the Lions stand right now, he'll be the focal point of that passing offense. And well, I mean, you know, we've seen it with Tyler Higbee for, you know, half a season last 2 years ago in 2019, like Jared Goff can get the ball to the tight end. I mean, Jared Goff's a professional quarterback. Like, again, I think he's a downgrade from Stafford, but the volume to me masks whatever downgrade there is in quarterback. And just to circle back on what you were saying about DeAndre Swift, like, if DeAndre Swift weren't a good pass catcher, I would agree with you. But I think, you know, he showed himself to be a true three down back towards the second half of the year for the Lions. And Anthony Lynn being installed, former NFL running back Anthony Lynn, being installed as offense coordinator, you know, after his time with the Chargers as the head coach and seeing, you know, the success that he had running the ball there with Melvin Gordon, obviously Austin Eckler.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Swift is just a really talented player. And I think if you're Anthony Lynn, who obviously is already prone to running the ball and just getting the ball into playmakers' hands, like, they don't have a lot in Detroit right now.
I was going to say, that prone to getting the ball in playmakers' hands, ask Chargers fans about that. Daniel, before we move on to the Super Bowl, Daniel, I know you want to close the books here on the Stafford trade. Again, once more, our resident Lions fan.
Yeah, so, and I just want to say this because I, you know, with you coming over and hosting the First Draft podcast, we also do that with Mel Kiper and Todd McShay every week. One of the things when we were talking about it there that I thought was really interesting that Mel brought up is the idea that, and Matthew alluded to this earlier in the podcast, Washington was a team that was interested in Detroit. We know what the Broncos supposedly offered the Lions, being Drew Lock and a pick this year. We saw what the Panthers supposedly offered the Lions. And rather than go for that pick this year, they decided to go for future picks. And Mel Kiper said something about that with the idea that this is the draft class that NFL talent evaluators know the least amount about, basically, in the history of NFL draft classes. So when you look at this organization saying, we understand that this is a part of a rebuild, but we are going to take these picks and have them for players down the road that we really feel like we'll be able to invest in and be able to have a better understanding of. I just thought it was a really interesting conversation and something that I hadn't thought about, you know, when Kiper had mentioned it. I thought it was a really good note as part of that thought process from the Lions leadership.
Last thing I'll say, Daniel, is that the other thing is the Lions probably know they're not ready to turn things around right away. And the minute you draft a first round player, the clock starts ticking, right? So if you're going to be really bad this year, like, wouldn't you rather have a first round talent infusion twice over next year and the year after when you're a year closer to being ready? But let's move forward to the Super Bowl, and just quickly on the Super Bowl. We're not here to recap the game.
And quickly, just spoiler alert, if you haven't watched the Super Bowl yet, if you have it on DVR, just spoiler alert, we're going to tell you who won. We're going to talk about it here. So just You know, people get very upset when you spoil things for them, Field. So you just gotta, you gotta say spoiler alert. You just gotta let people know.
Right. Well, once again, Cameron Brate leads the Bucs offense to victory. No, more seriously, obviously, Tom Brady. I'm not even going to get into it. The GOAT of GOATs, just forever Tom Brady. But Stefania, I'll start with you. Is there anything from that game that you think has a fantasy spin as we look ahead, whether it's the performance of somebody like Leonard Fournette in the playoffs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and his return? He looked okay, I thought, in that game, had the 126-yard run to begin the second half. Anything that's fantasy relevant from that game at all?
Yeah, I kind of can't help but I feel like I got to just talk about this because the day we're having it, we're talking about Patrick Mahomes having surgery. And I know that's not part of the game, but it did affect him in that game to me a little bit. Not in terms of the overall outcome before everyone comes at me, but Patrick Mahomes was clearly hampered in his mobility to a degree since he had the turf toe injury. We now know he's going to have surgery. Obviously, they'll know more after they do the surgery in terms of the extent of the repair, but I do expect him as of now to be ready to start the season. So good news there. But to your point, Field, yes, Leonard Fournette, I thought to me, looked like LSU Leonard Fournette at times. And that's a guy I haven't seen that. And I, you know, before you laugh, you guys laugh at me about the sort of the intangible aspect of something that's not quantifiable with players. But when they get down, look at the spin for him in Jacksonville after the injuries. You know, he never got quite past that ankle injury at LSU. It ended up being problematic. And then he had another couple lower extremity injuries while he was in Jacksonville. Then the discipline thing with the photo, he fell out of favor with the team. Like, he was in a bad place. And I'm not saying that that wasn't of his own making, but I kind of felt like he was done. And there's something about that change of environment to that organization and that structure. And I read something where he talked about how it was really hard. They told him when they brought him in, you're going to be a role player initially, and you're not going to touch the ball a lot, and you're going to have this thing, but stay patient. We'll see what happens. And that breakout time was in this game. And Leonard Fournette was the one in the end zone. Leonard Fournette was the one who looked like his career was rejuvenated. I don't see a reason for that to change. Like, the guy was playing inspired football, and I feel like we're kind of starting over with him.
Yeah, he was really, really good. And here's a chance for Leonard Fournette to maybe land on his feet elsewhere. Matthew, before we get to 2020 season takeaways, anything you wanted to highlight from the Super Bowl that you thought was particularly fantasy relevant?
I don't think there's anything that there's nothing from that one game that will influence how I rank those players going into the 2021 season. I mean, it was, look, obviously the Chiefs offensive line decimated by injuries. Kudos to the Buccaneers defensive front, who just dominated them all game long. Really a weird lack of adjustment by Kansas City to not throw another tight end in there, or, you know, do something to try to stem off that pass rush. I definitely think Kansas City didn't get the benefit of the doubt on some calls. Felt like the refs were calling some ticky-tack stuff in Kansas City and letting Tampa Bay get away with some stuff. But having said that, Tampa Bay was the better team and it wasn't particularly close. So I don't know that those calls really ultimately made a difference. Might have made a difference in the score, but didn't make a difference in the outcome of the game. So there wasn't really any takeaway other than just to, you know, congratulate Tom Brady. You know, there's an argument to made, Field, that Tom Brady is the greatest player of all time, any sport. Like, when you think about how tough the quarterback position is, and, you know, most people say the quarterback position is the most important position in pro sports. Is Tom Brady the greatest? Like, listen, are there people that can jump higher, faster? Yes, of course. I'm just saying, when you think about winning, when you think about, you know, everything that goes into being a quarterback in the NFL, is Tom Brady the greatest athlete of all time? When you think about him versus Jordan, him versus, you know, Bill Russell, Jesse Owens. I mean, you know, like, take your pick, Wayne Gretzky.
I was going to say, I think Gretzky has a thing to say about that, because he was pretty phenomenal too, while not being, you know, the most athletic person in the world.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the – listen, I – I think there's probably other spaces for us to have this conversation. I think we probably all shared our thoughts here, but clearly Tom is in the conversation for the best of all time when it comes to individual athletes, along with a few other select notable individuals.
It will be interesting to me to see. And I'm, you know, what's interesting is that I haven't heard a lot of talk about, is Tom going to retire? I think most people seem
because he's not going to retire.
He's not.
Right. Which is insane. You know, like if ever there was a time to like ride off into the sunset.
Nah, that's not what he's interested in. He's 84 years old, but there's no talk about that.
So
that's right. And so
let's move on from Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's any like, whatever, Godwin and Evans had bad games. You're still going to draft those guys high.
So if there's something to talk about, let's just move forward then. Let's move forward to the 2020 takeaways, which people who are listening to this podcast actually want to hear. Daniel asked us for a couple of each from each of us. So Stefania, I'm going to let you have the floor first and work through some of your takeaways, or at least a takeaway that you thought was particularly notable. Maybe you learned or were reminded of this past season.
I think it was something that was reinforced. And we started the season talking about the tier. We always do this, tiers at every position. And we talked about tiers at tight end. And we kind of didn't know what Rob Gronkowski was going to be in Tampa Bay. And he wasn't much. I mean, until the time when it really counted. But as we looked at tight ends, and we had George Kittle, Mark Andrews way up there, kind of close to Travis Kelce. And I think what this year did for me is it kind of created three tiers. And basically, Travis Kelce is alone on an island to me. Like, he now has become that guy that I wonder, as we approach next season, if we're going to talk about him the way we used to talk about Rob Gronkowski, where strategy-wise, do you want Travis Kelce late in the first round if you're in a deep league? Is he that valuable because he touches the ball that often? And Kyle has a stat for me when we were talking about this distinction. Since Kelce debuted, there have been two instances in which a tight end averaged 18 points for a full season. Travis Kelce in 2020 and Travis Kelce in 2018. That's it. That's the list. So I think right now he looked a little clunky in the Super Bowl, like slow, but he's clearly the outlet for Patrick Mahomes. He's going to touch the ball forever. He is up by himself to me in the tight end position. And then you've got this cluster. Mark Andrews and George Kittle have the talent for sure, but they both had down years. Kittle because of injury, and Andrews for a number of reasons, I think, that kind of brought him back to earth, but we expected a bit of a regression. And then Darren Waller, who continues to be a possession tight end, led the position with 107 receptions. So to me, those are the ones that are like worth targeting. And then everything else, to me, everybody becomes equal after that. Everyone else, there's not really anybody that jumps off the page for me. I know TJ Hockenson has talent. I know there are other tight ends that we've seen have big games here and there, but I don't feel like there's anybody even in the conversation of really trying to target in my drafts outside of those four.
Good stuff there, Stefania. We'll get back to you with a second takeaway in just a little bit. Let's keep it moving here. Mine is that if I'm looking back or looking forward for quarterback value next year, a lot of times you hear us at ESPN Fantasy saying, wait on quarterbacks. Wait, because you can get a guy in the 12th or 13th or 14th round that turns into a star. And you can. I mean, even this past year, there were some guys that were drafted, you know, late in the process. But look at where the sweet spot was this year. It was actually, in some ways, the second tier of quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, and Lamar Jackson were the first four quarterbacks off the board. And their ADP, and I'm assuming this is, I don't know if this is, hopefully this is reflective of last year's data. All those were top five round picks. Outside the fifth round, you had the likes of Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson and Justin Herbert. This must not be reflective of recent trends because, but my point is this. I'll pull up some data that I think Kyle did pass along. Guys who fell into that second tier this past year, Tom Brady, Josh Allen, and Aaron Rodgers. So I just think that there is better value in that second tier than there is in the late rounds and also early. I'm not going to pick a quarterback early. It just takes such an astronomically great season. And if you wait on a quarterback late, yes, you could strike gold. There just seems to be a high floor and a pretty high ceiling as well for some of those quarterbacks in the second tier. Maybe it's next year, a Dak Prescott, a Russell Wilson, an Aaron Rodgers, a Tom Brady again. Speaking of quarterbacks, Matthew, one of your takeaways was what?
You need one that runs, honestly. I mean, you know, as we sort of talked about, look, I mean, part of the reason why, Field, you talk about being able to find value there is because those guys run. And so, look, 8 of the top 10 quarterbacks this past year in terms of total fantasy points ran for over 200 yards. Okay? Each of the top 10 quarterbacks in terms of total points ran for multiple rushing touchdowns. And look, you just think about who is at the top, right? I mean, as you referenced earlier in the show, Aaron Rodgers, a little bit more mobile than you think. Aaron Rodgers had a lot of rushing touchdowns this year. But in addition to him, right, so you've got Mahomes, who's more mobile than, you know, gets credit for, obviously. I mean, that's all he was doing in the Super Bowl was running. Poor guy. But, right, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott has traditionally been fairly mobile. Justin Herbert is mobile. You think about, you know, obviously Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. You know, so you just sort of think about, like, sort of the guys that are going to be in that range. And then, as I mentioned, Jalen Hurts in the 4 starts he made as a rookie this past year was a top 10 fantasy quarterback on a points per game basis and total points. He was QB9 on both points per game and total points. And that was a guy that, again, a lot of his fantasy value came from rushing. So when in doubt, give me a quarterback that runs as well. I just think that's super important. To your point, as you said earlier in the show, the days of having a guy that just, the Matt Ryans of the world that drop back and throw, you know, manage to get fantasy value by throwing it 40 times. I think those days are few and far between. Those quarterbacks that can generate top 10 consistent fantasy value with no real rushing ability, but just, you know, dropping back and throwing that a ton. There aren't that many guys in the NFL. So I'm going to want a quarterback that runs next year.
Stefania, another takeaway for you was, hey, you know what? A guy may have left his former team, but doesn't mean he's going to have to wait long to become a star in fantasy again.
Yeah, especially with the wide receivers. And I think we make so much out of chemistry between a wide receiver and a quarterback. And if a wide receiver moves from one place to the next, how are they going to develop chemistry? And there was the added concern of it was the COVID era. So the offseason really changed and these guys didn't have time to work together. So how is it possible that some of these guys who are top wide receivers who move locations, how could they possibly have an up season? Well, two different guys proved the point. Stephon Diggs, who left let's say it was a testy situation, at least in Minnesota, moves to Buffalo. And I don't think anybody really expected huge things from him there. And now in this case, I will say that he worked very hard to develop chemistry with his quarterback in an unusual way. And this is going to be a shameless plug for the ESPN Daily. Go listen to the one on Stephon Diggs, because it's actually really interesting how he and Josh Allen managed through a pandemic to build this trust. So they hit the ground running. But his production when he went to Buffalo was clearly so much better than his last year in Minnesota. In Minnesota, 2019, he finished wide receiver 24 in total points. This year, wide receiver 3 in total points. Clearly a favorite target of Josh Allen, no question. And then the other one I look at is DeAndre Hopkins, who I did not think, I was not as anxious about his ability to produce immediately in Arizona, more because of the style of receiver that he was. He was always a guy who was going to be physical. I call him a go up and get it receiver wherever you throw it. As evidenced by the play that won best play of the year, the Hail Mary, he went up against 3 defenders and caught the ball. DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver 4 in total points, despite the change in location. So I would say don't automatically write them off. I think it'll be true in some cases, but study what they do in the offseason. Follow what we're saying about what we think about their fit and why it might be good. Don't assume that because they change places, they won't be able to be productive.
My second takeaway will be interesting to dovetail with Matthew's. But mine is that if I play in a deeper league, and I guess I would qualify that as anything larger than 12 teams, I'm going to be more willing this year to be aggressive early on wide receivers. You think to yourself, I'm in a 14-team league. I really need that star running back in the first round if I can find that player. One thing that I've noticed, and this is specific to the War Room, is that in recent years, it has often been a team whose wide receivers carried them to the championship or close to the championship, as opposed to a star running back. And I think what I've realized is that if you miss on a star running back early in a premium pick, it's going to be hard to replace that player, because in a deeper league, you're going to need good luck at running back anyway. So maybe, like, if you miss on a wide receiver in the first round, like if you used a premium pick on Michael Thomas this year, there are going to be more ways to fill that star receiver role. So rather than swinging for the fences early with running backs, which you can certainly do in a lot of situations, but if I'm willing to maybe hit a couple of singles with my running backs in rounds 3 to 5 that I think have, you know, steady value, maybe not league winning upside, I can build that league winning roster with other positions, whether it's a Travis Kelce, a tight end as a difference maker, or any of the great wide receivers that have emerged this year, Matthew. And your takeaway is there are a lot of great wide receivers.
Yeah. Listen, I don't think my takeaway is inconsistent with yours. I think your takeaway is, again, yes, in deeper leagues, you know, 14, 16 team leagues, you want predictability. And I think your argument is, in essence, yeah, that a lot of the big name wide receivers are actually more consistent than some of the big name running backs. At least we certainly saw that this year. But in general, you know, the majority of the people that listen to our show play in 10 and 12 team leagues. And so for those people, I just think the wide receiver position, which when we went into 2020, we went into the 2019 season, when we went into the 2020 season, the wide receiver position was deep. And I think going into the 2021 season, it's the same thing, right? I mean, so there were 37 wide receivers last year that had 180 fantasy points, 34 the year before, 32 the year before that, 24 the year before that. So we continue to see more and more players hit that 180 fantasy point threshold here. And you just think about sort of what a great, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times you hear like, well, what a great class this is. And then, you know, for running backs for a certain position. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. Coming into this year after the draft, we were like, this is one of the deepest wide receiver classes in history. And for the most part, they showed up. Right. When you think about the success of Justin Jefferson, of CeeDee Lamb, of Chase Claypool, of, you know, I'm blanking on
Brandon Ayuk and others. Yeah.
Brandon Ayuk was awesome. Yeah. Right. I mean, so many rookie wide receivers that were just so good this year. And, you know, we saw flashes from Henry Ruggs. We saw flashes there are a lot of guys, obviously, and I'm blanking on a bunch of
there's no shortage of guys that made contributions right away this year.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the bottom line in terms of rookies. And there's other guys that I think are poised to have breakout years next year. When you think about, like, you know, Gabriel Davis in Buffalo is a guy that I like quite a bit. Be very interested to see what happens with Antonio Gandy-Golden off of the injury in Washington, right? And so I think there's just a lot of interesting names out there. It's the deepest position ever. Darnell Mooney is a guy that I really like. Interesting to see what happens with him in Chicago, especially if Allen Robinson ends up moving on. You know, there's another guy that was a rookie. And so anyway, it's just, you know, Van Jefferson, you know, again, we'll see if Marvin Jones comes in, but Van Jefferson is a rookie that showed flashes this year for the Rams. And I know they like him a lot there in Los Angeles. So just be sort of Jalen Reagor is another guy that showed flashes and should be due for a bigger role in Philadelphia. So just his name's just sort of come to me, but I just think it's an incredibly deep position. And for the longest time in fantasy field, there was always the thing of like, don't bother with a rookie wide receiver, except maybe he's a late round flyer. Yeah. It's going to take him too long to get up to speed. And certainly this year we were nervous because no preseason, shortened off season, obviously, because of everything that was going on with COVID. And yet, obviously, as we just reeled off, there were a number of rookie wide receivers that made significant contributions to their teams, both real life and fantasy.
No doubt about that. It was a strong year for rookie wide receivers, and I can tell you that many in the NFL are excited about this upcoming class of 2021 rookie wide receivers as well. That's all we have for this show today. As a reminder, please go ahead and rate, subscribe, and review the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And we're going to try to be back, or the plan is to be back, every Tuesday. Time to be determined, but expect it hopefully sometime in the early afternoon for those of you on the East Coast. For Matthew and Stefania, I'm Field. More to come. So excited to have the off-season edition of the 06-010 underway. We'll talk to you guys next Tuesday.
Peace out.
Tennessee, you're in the 06-010.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.